Thank you. These are our offering baskets. And just because they're shallow doesn't mean they can't contain a lot. And we do this because we have a vision of what we can become in our larger community. And because we as individuals have come here because we need something. And we want our children to have something that goes beyond the rigidity and sometimes the competitiveness and heartlessness that can happen in our culture. And so, in support of our vision. I don't know, Pam, in addition to being fine music, you minister to us, and I'm so grateful. Thank you. Thank you. So, my. So this material called Beyond the Partisan Divide was created by a couple of Unitarian Universalist ministers who have parents who felt unwelcome when they went into their congregation because their parents were politically conservative and the congregation seemed overwhelmingly political liberal. And it just felt profoundly painful to the family that the parents felt so anxious about sharing their real beliefs with the rest of the congregation. And so I started with this curriculum, and Rachel, who is not here today, was working with me on it for a couple months. And we decided we wanted to bring it to the congregation. And we had a conversation yesterday. There were seven of us, I think. And after that conversation, I had to rewrite the whole thing. So I worked on it late last night, probably till, 11. This morning, I woke up at 6 and thought, oh, no, I have to rewrite it again. So, you know, I'm riding the wave of how deep we can go, how relevant what feels like a political circus can be to our spiritual lives and our community life. And so let me share with you like 3 points that came out of, for me, and I'm sure there are others among those who were present, and what will happen for you today, and I'm assuming, I'm planning on having time for us to really go deep with each other, that there were 3 things that stood out for me. And one of them is that it is very easy for a group of open-minded people, I don't even need to do this, a group of open-minded people to come together, and as we get to know each other, feel so grateful and comfortable in our open-mindedness that we become closed-minded. So we need to be wary of how truly open-minded we need to be, wary of shutting that down. I'll talk a little bit more about what I've seen happen in congregations all over the country. A second thing that we became aware of in our conversation is that being open-minded and willing to listen to others does not mean we don't take a stand. Being respectful and listening deeply does not mean we don't take a stand and work hard for what we believe is right. And the third thing is that what is happening now in what looks like our political landscape seems to be way beyond Republican and Democrat. That in fact, in Rachel's words, who was in this conversation yesterday, it could become a paradigm shift if we're willing to go deep in how we listen to the meaning of what's being said. And so the piece that came out of the information that was being shared that helps me is the concept of moral humility. Standing your ground and being willing to be wrong. Standing your ground with energy and vitality and being deeply interested in what's happening for the other person. And I'll talk more about that, and we'll talk more about that, I'm sure. So, my goodness. We were working with material from a man named Jonathan Haidt, who is a social psychologist born in 1963. His work is fairly recent, and he's a professor of ethical leadership at the New York University's Stern School of Business. He was named one of the top global thinkers by Foreign Policy magazine, and also one of the top world thinkers by Prospect magazine, which is a business magazine. He co-founded Ethical Systems. It's a nonprofit collaboration dedicated to making academic research on ethics widely available to the business community. So interesting, the worlds that he's crossing. He is also engaged in efforts to foster greater political civility and to increase the ideological diversity of social psychology, because he's recognizing a tendency for groupthink happening in the world of social psychology and other social sciences. So he's writing, his next book is on capitalism, and I cannot wait to see that. But one of the things that came out of his work, is coming out of his work, is it comes from social sciences and also some biological sciences that say that children are born with a template for morality based on five different things, and that all of us, whether we consider ourselves liberal or conservative, are morally ready to be concerned about caring for other people, and that means also the harm that happens to others, especially those we care about, and also to fairness. And then there are three other moral templates that we begin to diverge depending on how we were raised, et cetera, what our experiences are, that have to do with loyalty, purity, and deference to authority. Now, a lot of Unitarian Universalists are allergic to all three of those things, right? What is it we're going to be loyal to? I'm not going to be loyal to something I don't agree with. I will stand for other people to resist authority that is what I believe to be corrupt. And what did I say the third one was? Purity. That, oh my, what he brought up was, yes, there is a Christian and other religious communities' concept of purity that has been used over millennia to help our human societies organize ourselves to work together for a common good, so that we needed more, a different kind of authority to go beyond what our own desires are. So the purity that many of us are concerned about in a lot of religious communities that restricts people's access to healthcare, restricts all kinds of things, is of great concern. The purity that Jonathan Haidt brought up, that tends to be a liberal purity, which embarrassed the heck out of me, was about food. That we are much more likely, as quote unquote, those who are open to change and who are thinking about themselves more in the liberal world of politics, are focusing more on getting the right kind of food and not touching other foods that are considered to be impure. So that's a hypothesis that he has, and it's an interesting one. But let me go back here. What I want to make sure we all know is that I'm not talking about liberal religion here. Liberal religion is liberal because we accept and we feel a responsibility to come to truth and meaning using all input. So various scriptures, poetry, art, science, our own experience, each other's experiences. That's liberal religion. That's open to many, many sources of shaping our truth and meaning. Liberal, the way Jonathan Haidt, as a scientist, is talking about it, liberal politics or a liberal human being would tend to be one who's more apt to choose change rather than stability. And when he talks about a conservative person, it would be someone who's more apt to choose stability over change. And when you think about it that way, you realize we need both. We really need both. Because you don't want to spin out of orbit with uncontrolled change. And you don't want to stay stagnant with only stability. So there are lots of sciences like polarity management. There's just all kinds of ways we think about managing the conservative and liberal tendencies, not the same as liberal religion, but within our communities. So When we're thinking about being wary of groupthink, as people who, in what we call a liberal religion, we actually are, in fact, majority liberal politically across the country as Unitarian Universalists, probably in part because we're open to change and experiencing variety and being challenged and paradox is interesting, which is not as comfortable for a person who leans more towards stability. But it doesn't mean we don't have both tendencies in each of us individually, but in our group, we have greater strengths on either side. So what happens when we come together and we have a majority of people who are open to change and think of themselves as not just liberally religious, but politically or socially liberal, we get feeling comfortable. As a small church specialist, which was my work before I came here, I worked with small congregations all over the country. I've worked with more than 100 congregations. And often I would ask, what is it that you love about your small congregation? And very often people would start by saying, it feels like a family. I feel loved here and cared for. I feel seen, which is great. And I like being with like-minded people. It's so comfortable to be with like-minded people. I feel at home with like-minded people. And boy, do I understand that. But that is tipping into the world of what Jonathan Haidt called team psychology. So that we're just more inclined to fool ourselves thinking that we're being open-minded while at the same time we're not as open to differences in how we think. So this is all to say we need to be wary of groupthink. Be careful that we're not standing up and saying something about ourselves and saying, oh, I don't have to explain that, we all think that way. It's not the case. And to be careful that we not make assumptions about who we all are here. We need to create as much of an open space as we can here for real openness. I think we're up for that. I really do. But that's sort of where the material that the UU Beyond Political Division curriculum stopped. It was, you know, make sure that Republicans and liberals feel comfortable or able to respect each other, that it's loud and clear that we respect each other here. And what the conversation yesterday evolved into was pushing us beyond that. And so the idea here is that if we're being wary to resist groupthink, and we're encouraging each other to take a stand for what we believe to be right, then what happens in our current political atmosphere, where the message is that, as George's story said, if you think this way, then this is true about you. Or if you vote that way, then I assume this is all true about you. And not only am I going to do all I can to defeat you, but I think you're unintelligent. You scare me. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. That stuff is rampant in our political system, and in our culture, in our neighborhoods. So as a Unitarian Universalist congregation, we stand for spirit of fellowship with our diversity. We stand for peace. And that's not a silent peace. That's an active peace. We stand for seeking truth. So we're going to resist team psychology and keep digging for, where did I make an assumption here that might have excluded somebody else? And then there's the whole deal about if what's happening in our political system today really isn't about Republican and Democrat, it seems to be loaded with rage and revenge and a desire to establish two things, either a domination that helps people who are threatened feel more in control, and or a radical change of the system that shifts the paradigm so that we really challenge poverty and racism. And both of those things are foundationally challenging, and they've been way oversimplified into liberal and democratic in explosive language. It's a very, well, it's a loaded atmosphere. And I ask myself, as a person of faith, as a Unitarian Universalist who claims to be an open-minded person, what's my job? What's my job? So, just to give credit where credit's due, it was Rachel who talked about maybe this is a place of paradigm shift in our culture where there's an opportunity for us to listen enough to really understand what's going on underneath it all so that perhaps we can make real change. And in Beth's language, if I'm not misquoting her, it's to become a more mature culture where we can actually address the issues of class and race and not in the oversimplified circus that we see going on in our political atmosphere. Bless you. So it is a charged atmosphere that I think a lot of us feel is potentially, well, it has great risk. It has already unleashed the lack of civility, but where have we used civility to squish down real oppressions and real complaints? Where have we used civility to silence people who need to have their voices heard? So, man, this is so complex. So where do we stand? How do we stand is probably a better question. How do we stand? How do we move? How do we ask questions? One of the things that I've been doing is looking for little phrases to help myself stop being polarized, stop getting into groupthink. One of them is help me understand. So when somebody says something that just feels outrageous, help me understand. It was Elaine who said, where did that information come from? Not arguing it, but where did that information come from? Gosh, there's different information. And there's also, on my door, I have a magnet now that says, it's got this dog with a really unhappy face. His muzzle is all unhappy. And it says, the words on it are, just because you're outraged doesn't mean you're right. That's for me. I need that because I'm getting outraged a lot in this political climate. And it doesn't mean I don't take a strong stand. Hi, are you just exercising or did you want to say something? Well, I would love to hear what you have to say. And if you want, you can whisper it to your daddy and he can tell us more loudly if you'd like. Can you say it loud? Would you repeat that so everybody can hear?
Try to control your body and know what everyone feels?
So my jaw drops. Thank you very much. I think you're right. I think that's very wise. So when I'm outraged, I have to control my body and breathe and think about what's going on and maybe ask the question, help me understand, or what is going on here, right? Are we all just tingling a little bit that a child said something that way? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. So never doubt that the children are watching. So, all right, so we're going to vote our conscience in November, but between now and then, and especially after the election, if we're called to be open-minded and ask questions like, so who's benefiting from this situation in this way? And what are the questions I can ask, and where can I stand to try and advance understanding and just change? This is no small thing. This is no small thing. So we can talk a lot, and should, about the different kinds of oppression that are occurring in our culture, and the different dynamics of playing people, groups of people against each other to keep us busy and not asking the really big questions. We can and should put our cairn back together so we know where we're going there. And here's the spiritual piece that Jonathan Haidt recommended in his talk, and that for me is going to keep reminding me of my work as a Unitarian Universalist. And what he says, beyond being a person who is drawn to change over stability, and beyond being a person who prefers stability over change, we can find a stance that is quite Eastern of, you know what, we need each other. Change and stability need each other. Yin and yang are interlocked. They do not exist separate from one another. So what is it that we are supposed to be hearing here? And the other is a phrase that he used of moral humility. And that moral humility, for me, means get clearer and clearer, listen really well, claim my moral authority, speak, or write, or stand, or do what needs to be done from your perspective, in your gift. And then listen. Listen to understand, because that could inform my current moral stance, and perhaps should, in a world where we have so effectively isolated, separated, and downgraded people, that this might just be an opportunity to begin to shift the paradigm. What if? What if Republicans and Democrats started thinking again, we need each other? We're going to push and shove we're going to work out the details because we need each other. We cannot have a culture without each other. And then with the explosive stuff that's going on, listening to what's going on underneath, find the moral core. Find the moral core. And I have to say that one of the places, before I verbalize this in response to this material, I was very drawn to the work of Reverend Barber in North Carolina, who started the Moral Monday movement. It's what he's calling a fusion movement, where labor organizers, women working to change domestic violence, people working for $15 an hour, people of color who are experiencing all kinds of backlash, where and the LGBT communities, they're all coming together because they get that we're all living with a similar system that will not change unless we come together to work for change. So moral humility requires us to stretch ourselves to make sure minimally that we're not just welcoming but interested in hearing the views of Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians and Green Party people, that we're interested. And it's hard sometimes. Go beyond that to moral humility, to understanding something more about what's happening in your neighborhood. So I'll tell a story. It sounds like I know what I'm doing. I was at the gym, where you get quite a variety of people. You know, a gym where you do exercises? There was a person doing exercises way across the room who was really loud, and two women who were just, their voices were really, really big. And so I couldn't help but hear, as could everybody else hear, they were talking with a lot of, they were using a lot of facts, a lot of, details, data about how many people here and how many people there and how much money here and how much money there. And they came to the conclusion that there was this whole swath of our community that didn't deserve to get help, that we had to stop that. And what really hurt me was the conclusion out of all that data that they had the right to, the entitlement to claim it for themselves and say, you know, and it was in the tone of, our civilization will end unless we change this. I mean, it's, and I know, I sometimes feel that if the other guy wins, everything as I know it is going to change. I'm afraid. So I went over and I said, I really wish they would ban political, and the both of them said, yes, we agree. And I said, maybe banning politics is a great idea, but I wish we would ban political arguing in the gym, because it's not a place where I can really have a conversation with you. And the response was, don't listen. And I just shut right up. I couldn't figure out what to say. And I got really mad. And I really labeled those people. You know probably what I'm thinking. So, right. I thought, well, I'm going to make sure I bring another person. I'm going to cancel your votes. So it really, you know, I went right to that defended place. It took me a day or two to realize that what I wish I had said, and maybe I will when I finally see her again at the gym, what really upset me was what you were saying about a whole group of people that I have friends in, that I love. There are people I love that you're saying don't deserve protection and care and equal rights. And I mean, and then what can we, what kind of conversation can we have there? So I'm not good at this. I'm working at it. I've been working at it probably my whole life, and I'll just keep on working. So I see another hand up, and it's time for us to sing a song and then have a conversation where everybody gets to hold up their hand if they'd like to. So can you hang on to your, don't forget your idea, okay? Remember, because we want to hear it. This particular hymn on 298 is awfully long. We're not going to sing the whole thing. Wake Now My Senses is a hymn that is sung every single time a minister gets ordained. It's sung every time, often when a congregation gets a new minister. It's sung when a congregation starts its own new congregational ministry. Wake Now My Senses is for us to be called to be our Unitarian Universalist best. So let's do Oh Heavens, the second, and we'll also do the fifth. Okay, 2 and 5. Thank you. Please rise in body or spirit.
lift and praise the sublime. Wake now my vision of ministry clear, brighten my pathway with radiance here. Mingle my calling with all who will share. Work toward a planet transformed by our care.